conversation on The Breakfast Show here on KBC English Service.
So I want us to imagine something real quick. Imagine a young girl with a disability missing school, not because she isn't brilliant, but not because she doesn't want to listen, but because her body bleeds, because no one taught her how to manage it with dignity, because the world whispers shame where it should be shouting support. Today we're tearing open those whispers and we're talking about this. Welcome to this conversation about disability and dignified periods, where menstrual health isn't just about pads and pain. It's about power, access, and the right to live unapologetically. Tomorrow, the 28th, is Menstrual Hygiene Day, a global call to action, but for millions of girls and women, especially those living with disabilities, action can't wait. Stigma locks them out of classrooms. Myths chain them to fear. Poverty forces impossible choices, like, do I eat today or do I buy sanitary pads? And what if your hands can't change a pad? What if no one ever taught you how? This morning, honored to have two warriors lighting this path. I am joined by Irene Awino-Meli, a peer trainer, shaking the table with menstrual cups, a tiny innovation that's saving girls' futures one decade-long cup at a time. She works with Could You? This is a movement slashing period poverty across Africa with proof that dignity is non-negotiable. Very good morning to you, Irene. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
I will just say big ups to all your efforts. What you're doing is it's literally the Lord's work.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And we appreciate you. Our second guest, Juliet Mwema, psychologist, inclusive rights advocate, is on the way. That traffic. Hey, lucky you, you managed to beat that traffic. And then it's the cold season, so woo. But anyway, she shall be joining us in just a few minutes. We're going to confront raw truths, like how a lack of toilets keeps girls at home, how myths link menstrual cups to lost virginity, how a 10-year cup is fighting FGM in Narok, and most of all, how silence is the real disability. Now, whether you're a parent, whether you're a teacher, or just someone who believes in equality, this hour is dedicated to you. The revolution is bloody and it's beautiful. So I want to start. Let's begin, Irene, with where pain meets possibility. Like, from where you sit, does menstrual dignity remain a luxury for so many in Kenya, or no?
Okay, for me, I think menstrual cup is not a luxury. It's part of a basic need. Because, mm-hmm. There are so many girls out here who are not able to get access to it. Yeah, so for us as Hands of Grace, we make sure that at least we donate them to girls who have started their periods, to make sure we end period poverty, period shame, and period discrimination. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very well said. Now, for the benefit of a listener who just heard you say menstrual cup, but they're not exactly sure what it is, let's break down what exactly is a menstrual cup. How does it work?
Okay, a menstrual cup is a medical silicone. It's made of medical, so it's kind of silicone. So we have three ways of inserting it in the vagina. Mm-hmm. We have the C-fold, the punch down, and the 7-fold. The one good thing about menstrual cup is that once you've inserted it well, you'll end up forgetting that you're on your period. It's so good. Personally, I've used it for the last 2 years, mm-hmm. and it has really saved me from a lot. The rule here is just inserting it well. When you insert it well, you'll end up forgetting that you're on your period. Of course, you can't compare it with other menstrual products like sanitary towels, mm-hmm. and tampon. Because for the menstrual cup, you can swim with it, you can do exercise with it. Wow. And then one menstrual cup sustains you for up to 10 good years.
Up to 10 years?
Yeah.
That's a wonderful innovation. That's a great one. And so some girls, especially in the rural areas, there's this talk that they may fear that it affects virginity or cleanliness. What are some of those most common concerns that you've encountered so far?
So far, we normally advise girls before using the menstrual cup, do more research. Mm-hmm. It can't break the virginity. And then before you insert it inside the vagina, make sure your hands are clean. Because if you don't clean your hands, you might get infection. So we normally advise girls, when you get the menstrual cup for the first time, you make sure you sterilize it. You boil it for 5 good minutes and then wash your hands with soap. Don't wash a menstrual cup with soap because you might also get infection. Yeah, so make sure you wash your hands thoroughly before using it.
Mm-hmm.
It can't break the virginity. That's a myth.
That's a myth.
Yeah.
It cannot break the virginity. I like that. Now, you've been on the front lines training girls and women on menstrual health. Tell me what the reaction has been like on the ground. Like, once is there a story that you can share where a girl's her entire trajectory shifted because of this innovation, the menstrual cup?
Yeah, okay. I can say most of the girls, most of my age mates, they do use a menstrual cup. So we normally don't give young girls because they are kind of afraid of inserting and removing in the vagina. Mm-hmm. So we normally advise most of the girls like from 16 years and above to use it. And most of them are actually using it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the results have been great. The numbers, a lot more ladies are taking it up.
Yes, sure.
Oh, that's great. Now, let's talk briefly about Kuju. It's already making an impact in many counties. Could you tell us about your collaboration with government and grassroots organizations? Like, how are you ensuring that, you know, menstrual dignity isn't just a one-time event, but this is like a sustained, scalable movement?
So for us, as Hands of Grace, we do partnership with different organizations to make sure that, like, if you want to reach us, like, if you have your number, we normally go for events, we give out our numbers, and then we do partnership with different organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to make sure that CAPS reach each and every person who is in need of it.
Mm.
Yeah.
What's in your view, because you've used it for a while now, and you encourage others to, and you show them how to, what makes the menstrual cup not just a product but a tool for breaking period poverty and restoring dignity?
The fact that it's able to sustain you for the next 10 good years. And like cup, sanitary towels, you have to use money monthly to buy pads, like 8 bob monthly. At least when you save that 8 bob monthly, it will be able to help you. Yeah. Maybe I can just tell a small story.
Sure, go ahead.
So like, okay. In 2019, I was in Form 2, wow. And I was raised with a single mom who wasn't financially stable. And most of the times, she was really finding it difficult to provide our needs. And for me, I do believe that menstrual products are also part of basic needs. So most of the times, I was really finding it difficult to get access to menstrual product. But this time I was in class, and then I was just imagine you're having a rug and sanitary towels, and you are in a crowd of people. Mm-hmm. Of course, you won't be comfortable. So there's a time I was in class, and then I was having a rug. Unfortunately, the teacher entered the class, and I was like smelling somehow bad. Mm-hmm. But so when I got a menstrual cup, it really helped me a lot, because when you're using it, you won't even feel any smell. It's very comfortable. It's good. Yeah.
Oh, wow. This is definitely a great innovation. That will definitely go a long way into breaking period poverty.
Yes. Sure.
And, yeah, in storing dignity. Because, yeah, I also forgot about the fact that sometimes there's the odor factor that also comes into play when it comes to period. Okay, all right. Let's challenge some myths, misconceptions, and stigma when it comes to menstrual matters. Stigma around menstruation persists among many cultures, and it's even more intense when disability is involved. Maybe Irene, tell us, what are some of the common myths? And also, let's also give some focus to the harmful beliefs that you have encountered in your time. Like, how do they impact access, confidence, and support for these girls with disabilities?
So maybe the harmful belief. Mm-hmm. Most of the girls out here being like, when you're on your periods, most of them are being discriminated. There are some places that you are restricted. You're not supposed to go there. And yeah, but we need, as girls, we need to accept this because it's a normal thing. It's our part. And then stigma, I can remember in 2019, mm-hmm. there's a 14 years who killed herself. Why? Because she started her period, and instead of the teacher helping her, he started embarrassing her in front of the students. She ended up killing herself. So we really need to talk about this to at least be able to end discrimination and stigmatization.
On that note, Irene, here's a follow-up question, because, wow, that's a very unfortunate situation. If we look at the caregivers, we look at parents, we look at teachers, we look at health workers, they're often like you can say to a certain extent they're like the gatekeepers to dignity when it comes to persons living with disabilities. But what if they believe these myths? What's the way forward? How do we equip them to support girls with disabilities without perpetuating shame?
I think we just need to create awareness, and the government also should chip in to make sure that at least they know, at least they get information, mm-hmm. to be able to help girls. Yeah.
Help to get information to help girls. So would I be correct in saying, Irene, that because maybe there's a teacher who's listening and is like, well, man, I was never trained to handle stuff like that. What's your message to them? Should we do a mass training for the teachers, for the caregivers? What's your opinion?
I think they should be trained how to handle girls, because these girls are we find out that others are so young, they don't know how, for example, it's your first time to have menstruation periods, you don't know even what to do. So instead of encouraging a girl, you end up embarrassing her. Mm-hmm. So I think they really need to get informed.
There should be more information passed on to them. What about let's look at the like people from the religious and cultural leaders, because they are a very significant part of the society, especially in the rural areas. So what role can they play when it comes to myth busting, debunking these myths and changing people's mindsets?
I think they also need to get information, because for me, I feel like they are lacking information. Like, how can you restrict someone? Like, how can you like restrict someone to go in a place because she's on her period? Mm-hmm. It's so bad, because like, for example, some cultures, they do believe that when you're on your periods, you don't need to go. You are not allowed to go to church or mosque, of which it's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a normal thing. We just need to accept it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Irene, where do these conversations, where do you see these conversations starting? I want to believe that in the home it should be a conversation that's happening in school. And when I'm talking about school, I don't mean the, because back in our days, I believe this is how it happened. There was a time boys were told, go out into the field, and then the girls remained. And I guess that's when the teachers in the school I went to. So we have the conversations in the house. Should we have them in the schools to all the students, male and female students, male and female teachers? Do you feel that would be a step in trying to break and change these mindsets?
Yes, sure. Everyone needs to know, to listen to this information, because, yeah, also those boys need to know the truth. They need, actually, at Hands of Grace, we normally work with boys. We also teach them how to use a menstrual cup, because they also have sisters, they also have girlfriends. They need to hear this information to know how to deal with girls, because it will be so shameful when you're having a period and you're sitting maybe beside any male person, and maybe most of them, they don't know. They'll start laughing, or they'll start judging you, not knowing that it's not your fault. So for me, I feel like all of them need to get information.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Everyone should get the adequate information.
Yeah.
Very, very true. Her name is Irina Winomel. She's a peer trainer with Kudu, an organization transforming lives with sustainable menstrual solutions. How long have you been a peer trainer?
Almost a year.
So we can take stock of from a year ago when you started. How have you seen the uptake of everything, especially the menstrual cup?
It's good because we've been able to work with so many girls, with so many organizations. We do partnerships. So, yeah, for me, it's just good.
I like that. We had earlier asked our listeners to answer. So we'd asked the question, do you think it's time menstrual health is treated both as a hygiene and human rights and dignity issue? Here's my favorite response was this one that came from Elizabeth Onyango. Tell me what your thoughts are on this. She said it's very true. A right to privacy. If you body shame, that's why young girls drop out of school.
Sure.
When indeed every child has a right to education. A lot. Have you witnessed a lot of disruption in the education process because of periods?
Yes, sure. There are so many girls, most of those who live in slums.
Mm-hmm.
So as I said earlier, they really find it difficult to get access to menstrual products. So they end up getting like boyfriends or men who will provide them money. And one good thing about our men, they don't refuse. They'll just accept to offer you what you want, and then under one condition, you'll have to sleep with them to get that money. So they end up getting pregnancies, early marriages, and HIV and AIDS.
Yeah.
Which is so painful.
It's a terrible cycle. How much does the menstrual cup go for?
It goes for 1500, but for us we normally give them free.
Oh, wow, yeah. Fantastic. And one can sustain you for 10 years.
Yes.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful stuff. I want to play you a clip from a gentleman called Peter Bishop from a production company went out to gather opinions of Kenyans on whether menstrual health should be a matter of hygiene and human rights. Let's take a listen to what some of these Kenyans had to say.
Masi from Nakuru. Period health should be included, the human right, and the factor that should be taken into great consideration, because there's some marginalized areas that have girls or women facing these issues.
Dixon from Kisumu County. No, I don't think. It originated from God, not from human beings. It is just like creation.
My name is Eunice Molinge from Machakos. Should be made a human right, because many women out here are suffering because that menstrual health isn't considered as a human right.
Tiana from Mwambe County, and I think menstrual hygiene should be made a right, because some of the females that go through it, especially the marginal areas, are not able to access it, maybe due to prices or just the regions they are.
My name is Lina from Meru County. The government should implement more measures to ensure that menstrual health is in the human rights, because matters to do with women are important and they should be considered.
Shout outs to Peter Bishop from our production team who went out to gather those different voices. And now, as you've heard, Irene, they are very, very varied responses. Some people say this is something that came from God. Can't really mess with it. I had another lady who said, you know, yeah, a gentleman actually, who said that, you know, the ladies in the rural areas, especially, they have a lot of trouble with access. So I pitch this question to you based on what you heard. Why would you think it is important to treat menstrual health not just as a hygiene issue, but as a human rights and dignity issue, especially when you think about those with disabilities?
I think we should to end period shame, period mm-hmm. poverty, and stigma, discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
it's definitely to make sure that we curb that. Indeedy. I believe our second guest just walked in. Finally, I am glad you managed to make time. We are joined by the other guest, whose name is Juliet Mwema, psychologist, inclusive rights advocate. Hello, how are you doing?
I am very fine.
Uh-huh. Thank you so much for making time.
Thank you.
For coming into the Breakfast Club. We've been talking with Irene for a while, but I want I would like you to share something with us, the untold stories. Like, let's in the rural areas, girls with disabilities often face a double burden, which is social stigma, and then there's also physical barriers. Maybe Juliet, you can paint a picture for us. Like, what does a typical menstrual day look like for, let's say, a 14-year-old, a 14-year-old with a disability, like maybe cerebral palsy, and then there's no running water in the village, or maybe there's no access to toilets. How does a day in a menstrual day in that girl's life look like?
So thank you very much. My name is Juliet Mwema, and thank you for having me. The day in a girl, an adolescent girl with a disability, mm-hmm. is quite challenging. Number one, picture this girl coming from informal settlements of Kenya, where accessibility is a challenge. There are barriers towards accessibility. Say, for example, for a girl who is visually impaired like myself, mobility is a challenge because of the structures of the informal settlements, due to lack of finances or poor economic empowerment by the caregivers or parents. Uh-huh. In most cases, they cannot afford this very essential item. So what this normally leads to is the use of unhygienic products during the menstruation days. For example, we had instances where a girl will tell you they used pieces of a mattress or
Yikes.
A lasso or a dirty cloth. Because basically for the parent or the caregiver, the priority is food and shelter. Mm-hmm. This other essential item becomes now as a secondary item to them. So that, in a very brief summary, is the day of a girl with disability during their menstrual hygiene days.
Yikes. And Juliet, have you ever experienced an instance where a caregiver neglects menstrual needs?
Definitely, yes. Number one, in the context I have just created, that number one, it's not a priority to them. The priority mm-hmm. is probably food, shelter, clothing. Any other thing that comes after that is not a primary need. Secondly, there are these myths and misconceptions regarding women and girls with disabilities, that once you have a disability, probably you do not menstruate, number one. Number two, because of the whole stigma and cultural barriers around it, mm-hmm. again, no one will give it priority. So this adolescent girl is left to fend for themselves. And in most cases, because one of our girls who is deaf told us that she went to a shop and tried to just take this item on credit, mm-hmm. the shopkeeper lured her, because he knew very well she's deaf, she can't talk, that I will give you if you give me the X favor, mm-hmm. then I'll give it to you. So this has also led to a lot of teenage pregnancies.
Yes, Irene highlighted that one just as you were walking in, by the way. And now that you're here, I will replay this clip that I had played off to Irene. Our production team went out to gather opinions on Kenyans, and the question was just, do you think that menstrual health should be a matter of hygiene and human rights?
Yes, it is.
Let's take a listen to what Kenyans had to say.
Mercy from Nakuru. Period health should be included, the human right, and the factor that should be taken into great consideration, because there's some marginalized areas that have girls or women facing these issues.
Dixon from Kisumu County. No, I don't think. It originated from God, not from human beings. It is just like creation.
My name is Eunice Molenge from Machakos. It should be made a human right, because many women out here are suffering because that menstrual health isn't considered as a human right.
Tiana from Mwambe County, and I think menstrual hygiene should be made a right, because some of the females that go through it, especially the marginal areas, are not able to access it, maybe due to prices or just the regions they are.
My name is Lina from Meru County. The government should implement more measures to ensure that menstrual health is in the human rights, because matters to do with women are important and they should be considered.
Thank you so much to Peter Bishop for going out there to gather those different voices. So, Juliet, what's your reaction from very different responses from the males and the females? What do you have to say to that?
Well, my personal response is it is a human right, like any other right.
Right.
It should be prioritized the same way a parent will prioritize, say, for example, education or food. Menstrual hygiene should also be prioritized. We had an incident where our girls with disabilities are just left on their own. The parents or caregivers will not even tell them about this stage in life. So once it happens, they either consult their peers or whoever who is available, leading to a lot of misinformation. So they should, much as they prioritize the menstrual hygiene, they should also prioritize the education around menstrual hygiene for especially adolescent girls with disability.
And Juliet, is there a story, something that stuck with you from the field, maybe a challenge or a triumph that highlights why this issue really needs more visibility?
Definitely. In one of our many outreaches at the Action Foundation, we do a lot of dignity kits distribution throughout the year. We don't wait for the commemoration date. So one of the incidences was in Kwale during our STEM camp, where we usually incorporate a lot of mentorship and menstrual health hygiene. A lady from a school known as Sahajanad, which is a school for students with intellectual disabilities. Mm-hmm. So we called her just to get her feedback, what impact the dignity kit has had on her. And her first reaction is she cried. She told us she's shocked that we would want to hear the opinion of an intellectually handicapped student.
Wow.
And she said, in most cases, they are overlooked. People make decisions on their behalf. People don't even give them the opportunity to express themselves. So she went on to express the way, because of the dignity kits they receive, she no longer misses school.
Mm.
In this day and age, she'll tell you, every month I used to miss school because my parents cannot afford this essential item. So it has led to a lot of school retention. She's able to study comfortably like her counterparts without disability. She doesn't have to worry about like messing herself and losing her dignity during this time. She knows that as long as she's in school, receives the kit, she'll be in school the whole time, no missing out school, and this has led to improved academic performance. Overall, leading to confidence, dignity towards this adolescent girl with disability. So what didn't leave me is she's intellectually handicapped, and no one, their voices are often overlooked.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a very touching story. I like that. It's a 8:30. The big conversation is what we are having right now. Disability and dignified periods is the topic. Joined by Irene Melly, who is a peer trainer, as well as Juliet Mwema, an inclusive women rights advocate. Now, let's touch on designing for inclusion. Juliet, how often are menstrual health solutions designed with disabilities in mind?
So sadly, and in most cases, they are not.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep, in our advocacy, we keep advocating and saying, be deliberate and intentional in program design. Because most people will tell you, even funders, they'll tell you, we've never really thought about menstrual hygiene, especially for women and girls with disabilities. I'll give an example. A wheelchair user who's probably paralyzed from waist down will not use the normal, quote-unquote, sanitary towel.
Mm-hmm.
They will use adult diapers.
Right.
The cost of one pack is 1,100 with only 10 pieces. So calculate the cost implication of this person needing to buy either 3 or 4 packs during these days. Of course, in most cases, they won't afford. So going back to design, a lot of people do not remember that in design. So my call to action to that is be deliberate, be intentional. And inclusion, when you talk about inclusion, let it not just be a talk or on paper. Let us implement and be at the forefront, preaching and showing, leading the way in inclusion and advocacy in every aspect, especially in menstrual hygiene.
And have there been any current interventions that you know will accommodate people who have mobility problems, visual impairment, intellectual disabilities?
So yes, especially from the Action Foundation. Like I mentioned, we do a lot of dignity kits distribution from our scholars, because we offer scholarships to women and girls with disabilities. As long as you're a scholar, you will receive this essential item throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you are a participant in any of our intervention, like today after this show, we are going to Mathare Special School.
Mm-hmm.
A school of children with intellectual disabilities. Parents and their teachers telling us they don't know how to handle the whole aspect of talking to these girls.
Yeah.
So being intentional, going to these schools, so we're also doing a lot of systems change, that even when budgets are being made, they are inclusive, they have this specific item in their budget. Think about it, there's budget allocation for books, there's for this, but there's no for dignity kits.
Mm-hmm.
When Garissa and one of the teachers was telling us, if she does not go into her pocket and support her deaf students, all the way in Garissa, this girl for sure, she told us they don't come to school. They will stay home.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're boarders, they will stay in the dorm. So being intentional, right, in systems change, policy, in education, what is our intention when it comes to inclusive education? What additional thing are we doing to ensure that this girl with a disability is in school other than getting this scholarship? What else do they need? Like, for example, assistive devices, menstrual hygiene kits, anything that revolves this girl remaining in school. Let us be intentional when it comes to policy and then implementation. Because Kenya is very good with policy. The only challenge is how we have is in implementation.
I am glad we all agree on that one for sure. I like the thing about schools. I had asked Irene this earlier, so now Juliet, you can tell us. Let's talk about how the community can become more inclusive.
Yes, very good question. Now, one of our interventions we have is we do a lot of community outreach. We reach out to the community, making them know about, number one, disability, because there's a lot of myth and misconception about disability. Making the community know that as much as I have a disability, I also have a right to education, to any access when it comes to hygiene, making community awareness and engagement. So when we call our women and girls with disability, we'll call their parents, we'll call their caregivers. Because you'll be shocked to find out a parent or a caregiver of a child with disability, discrimination and exclusion starts from home. They will prioritize to educate a girl or a child without a disability and leave them, this one with disability at home. So you see, if it stems from home, then that translates to the community at large.
True.
So we involve them. We call them to our meetings. Let them. We create a lot of awareness on disability rights, awareness creation, then to the larger community through a lot of community awareness, meetings, engagement, local administration, stakeholders. Because the community has community leaders, we have community health promoters, local administration. And again, this local administration is where this girl will go, say, for example, for bursary. There's no specific bursary for a child with disability. And the way the system is designed, this other child without disability will again be given priority.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of community awareness, starting from the family to the whole community, continuous, not one-off.
Community awareness starting from the family.
And also through shows like this, because a lot of people are listening. And imagine, shockingly, there are people who honestly don't know. They just don't know.
They just don't know.
Yeah.
This is true. Irene, Kuju works with local leaders, right? Chiefs, health workers. Okay. Tell us about how critical these alliances are in shifting the norms, especially because in the village areas, it's... Talking about periods, you have to admit, is taken with like, it's like an embarrassing thing to discuss. So how do you manage, how do you engage them? I guess, is there a certain language that you have to use to talk about this?
Okay, so we normally advise girls like to accept themselves because, yeah, they were created, God is the one who created them. So we normally tell them to accept themselves because period is just a normal thing. It's just a normal thing.
But so, what about the males in these groups? Like one of the local leaders, the male ones. How are they receptive of the information and learning it all?
Yeah, I said as I said earlier, we work with men in our organization, Hands of Grace. Yes.
Ah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. We like that. Juliet, when we talk about access, but it's more than just that products for girls with visual impairments or limited mobility, how does the lack of inclusive menstrual education in schools further isolate them?
So it creates, number one, direct exclusion. And we work towards inclusion. So it's causing exclusion to them, lack of accessibility. If, say, for example, I am visually impaired, I'm not able to know the menstrual hygiene products in the market. I'm not able to read the information displayed. I'm not able to know where they are available. I am deliberately being excluded from the system. Then what are the effects of this exclusion? A person might end up going to the wrong person for information, leading to a lot of misinformation, using wrong products that later on lead to infections and a lot of health challenges. So exclusion has a lot of effects, and that is why I insisted on being deliberately inclusive.
Yes. And you did mention about policies. We're good at formulating policies, but when it comes to implementation, that's where we always fall short. So from your advocacy perspective, what policy shifts would you say are the most is most urgent?
I will say, especially in the context for disability, I think Most, if not all, are urgent. Healthcare, for example, picture this, me being visually impaired and entering a health facility. Mm-hmm. I am alone. I do not have a guide. How am I supposed to know what services are being offered?
This
the accessibility, is it accessible? I recently suffered an injury and broke my leg. Is the environment accessible? Am I able to move alone without help? Is the information accessible? Is it being offered in alternative format, like in Braille?
Mm-hmm.
Or in soft copy, if, for example, there's no Braille, am I able to receive it? Is there a sign language interpreter? Because one of our girls was telling us, you go to a hospital, she doesn't have a sign language interpreter. So immediately what that leads to is that first, the healthcare provider will start making decisions on your behalf. Because mm-hmm. you're deaf, you, for example, you should not have children. Because you are deaf, you need this and not. So they're not listening to what has brought you there.
Right.
They are already making decisions on your behalf. One of our pioneer mentors shared her experience where she went, had a child. Normally, this was her fourth child through cesarean. But the doctor decided, because she's physically handicapped, she tied the tubes.
Whoa.
So she didn't know until later on where she had really been trying to have kids. And
without
later,
her consent.
Without her consent and her, without her knowledge.
Yeah.
So that's why I say most, if not all, from healthcare to education. I said because in a family where there are, say, for example, four children, one has a disability, most families will prioritize to educate children without disabilities because they feel like you already have a disability, education itakusaidia aje.
Mm.
So there's a lot of exclusion. So when I say healthcare, education, systems change. Even in the workplace, how many employers will talk about having the 5% that is mandated in the constitution? 5% should be persons with disability.
Mm-hmm.
So like I mentioned, we have policies and laws, but implementation
just implementing
is a challenge. And then when you talk to this employer, they start bringing this whole, they don't know about disability, or the cost of having a person with disability is quite expensive.
A shame.
Yeah.
What's your take, Juliet, on the government subsidizing sanitary products, or maybe including menstrual health as a core part of education and the disability policy?
I think that's a very great initiative, because like I mentioned, sometimes we can talk about it from here, but when you go to the ground where the girls are being affected.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, 2025, when you hear a girl missing out on school, or when she's missed out on school, she's in the house, she can't leave the house because of lack of this item. So like I said, that's a very good, it would be a very good initiative, and implementation to be very keen. But I also want to call upon stakeholders like non-governmental organizations to mm-hmm. support and help in system strengthening, because sometimes there will be delays, there will be hitches. That is where we come in and support and strengthen these systems to ensure, while we are supporting and working hand in hand in government, this girl, this woman will not miss out on school, will not miss out on whatever areas, even in sports, because of the lack of essential items like menstrual hygiene, dignity.
There is a question I want to pose to both of you and to hear your individual reactions. I'll start with you, Irene. From your review, from where you stand, what are the most overlooked voices in menstrual health conversations, and how do you think we can help amplify those overlooked voices?
I think for me, I will just say I'll talk about the government.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be prioritized menstrual hygiene, because, yeah, as I said, it's so sad to see that governments are providing condoms free of charge,
mm-hmm.
but again they end up charging, taxing sanitary menstrual products. So I'll just tell governments to at least do something about that.
What's the, if we were by some miracle able to bring the gender CS here right now, what's the first demand that you would make?
Of course, I'll just let them know that girls need sanitary towels, menstrual products instead of condoms.
Wow, well said, Juliet. I'm cutting to you. First question: the most overlooked voices in menstrual health conversations. What are they, and how can we help amplify them?
So the most overlooked voices are the voices of the women and girls in marginalized areas,
mm-hmm.
specifically girls with disabilities. And we have something called hidden disability. For example, a girl who is deaf, you're not able to just look and tell that she has a disability.
True.
Or a girl who has intellectual disabilities. Their voices are very often overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
They have a voice, they have a right to speak. Mm-hmm. Yes. So today, what I would advocate for is the same way we have books being given for free.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have let's be intentional in offering sanitary towels for free, even for women and girls with disabilities. We are not asking for much.
True.
It's not expensive. It is doable. Let's offer this essential item for free. Let us keep our girls in school
mm-hmm.
so that we improve their educational outcome.
And what message is it that you would give to the what? Demand would you make should you have the audience of the Gender CS right now?
Disability rights are human rights.
Mm-hmm.
Menstrual hygiene is a right just like any other human right. We keep saying leaving no one behind, but can we be deliberate in saying reaching the farthest behind?
Wow.
Yes.
Intentional. I like that. I like that. Very well said. Irene, you implement solutions. From your angle, what's missing in Kenya's current approach to menstrual health for persons with disabilities? Is it funding? Is it enforcement? Or maybe it's even something deeper. I don't know.
I think for me, it's funding and ignorance. Just the way she said, they are being left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Now, let's imagine this, Irene. It's May 28th, Menstrual Hygiene Day. A young boy, a teacher, a parent, a policymaker ask you, but what can I do? Okay. What's the message that you would give this teacher, this parent, this policymaker, this young boy who wants to help in this situation? What's the message that you would give them?
I think we should just be sister's keeper. At least try to help that girl who is in need of menstrual product. If you know very well you can be able to help, please help her so that you can be able to end period poverty and period shame, and at least be able to reduce some of the challenges that most of the girls are facing.
I like how you speak so powerfully. Juliet, what about you?
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, May 28th, Menstrual Hygiene Day. We've got a teacher, we've got a parent, a policymaker even, and then they come to you and they say, well, what can I do to help this situation? What's the message that you would give them?
I will say, like Wangari Maathai, the hummingbird story, I'm doing the best I can. Can we do the best we can in all our areas? If it is this parent, can this parent be inclusive at home? Treat this child with a disability like any other child without a disability. To the teacher, while you're implementing education, specifically inclusive education, what can you do? What is the best you can do for this child with disability? Is it pushing for policy change? Is it pushing for advocacy? For this boy, in his own capability,
mm-hmm.
we have a program where we have a male change champions portraying positive masculinity. We involve men in advocating for the rights of girls with disability and use them as agents of social transformation. For this boy, maybe it's just advocacy from his level.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, with my Wangari Maathai, she said, she very well put it, doing the best you can from where you are. Because your best will not be my best.
Mm.
Yes.
Doing the best you can from where you are.
Yes.
I love it. Final thoughts, though, that I want to share, of course, with both of you. Love to hear your comments. Irene, starting with you, if we ignore this issue, what is the cost, not just to the girls, but what is the cost to all of us?
Okay, for me, I believe that girls are the future leaders. So, of course, when we assume this thing, it's really going to affect them because most of them won't be able to reach their dreams. Like I said earlier, the story of that 14-year-old who killed herself.
Mm-hmm.
So most of them will maybe end up killing themselves. They'll end up having low self-esteem, not accepting themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. And Juliet, same question to you. If we ignore this, what's the cost? What is going to be the cost to all of us?
The cost will start from the community. We are carrying out something called discrimination. We are causing stigma to this person and marginalizing them more because they're already facing stigma, discrimination, and marginalization. The cost is a ripple effect. This girl will continue being left behind from education to healthcare, all aspects of their lives. What are we doing to their health? We are leaving them to experience health challenges because hygienically they are left behind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big cost that has a ripple effect in all aspects of their lives. Social inclusion, economic empowerment, because if you've left me behind socially, economically, there's no way I'm going to participate. When it comes to education, I'll not take part in education. So there'll be a lot of exclusion, a lot of isolation, discrimination. Mm. Yes.
And we do not want that at all. We have to acknowledge that there has been progress.
Yes.
And, you know, I wouldn't want us to end this conversation on a grim thing, because I believe that we really do want the very best for our girls. So maybe as a parting shot, I could get words of encouragement from what both of you have observed on the field. What would that message of encouragement be? This time I will start with you, Juliet.
Like I earlier on mentioned, like you said, let's not end it on a sad note. A lot of change and a lot of progress has been made. We thank God for organizations that come out and support our women and girls, both in and out of school, offering these essential items. We celebrate teachers like Teacher Hadija all the way in Garissa, ensuring that none of our students miss school. We celebrate caregivers who are male, who did not give up on their children.
Mm-hmm.
And they have continuously offered support to this girl. We have a father who has a deaf girl, and he says he doesn't care what the society says or the community says. He says this is a child like every other child. So while we celebrate every person in the life of a girl with disability, I'll just conclude by saying the same thing I said, leaving no one behind, but let us also be intentional and deliberate when you're doing inclusion, reaching the farthest behind.
Be intentional.
Yes.
Intentional. I like that word. I love it. Irene, your turn.
So for me, I'll just say, let's all come together and try to fight period poverty. Because for us, Hands of Grace, we do partnerships. So if you have any organization, I'll just give you my number. If you have any organization and you feel like you have some girls who are in need of a menstrual cup, you'll just contact us and see how we are going to go about it. Yeah.
How can they contact you?
Okay, maybe I'll just give you my number.
Sure.
07690 754
Uh-huh. That number one more time is 07690 754 81. That is how you can get in touch with Irene. Okay, I love it. Thank you so much, ladies, for coming in. I must commend you on the great work you're doing. You are changing generations and leading the future. So we cannot make light of it. This is really big work that you do, and we appreciate you. Tomorrow, any plans for the day tomorrow?
Yes, definitely. At the Action Foundation, we have so many plans. Like I mentioned, like today we are going to Mathare.
Today you're going to Mathare.
Mathare Special School.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're going to be dealing specifically with adolescent girls with intellectual disability.
Mm.
We're going to do a lot of talk, menstrual talk, mentorship, and definitely distributing the dignity kids. Tomorrow we will be attending a Dagoretti school in Dagoretti.
Mm.
Same activities, menstrual hygiene talk, engaging, because it's usually a question and answer session.
Yeah.
And definitely distributing dignity kits. And the other three events we're just going to be participating and letting. We are big on women-led activities where we participate, yes, but let the girls speak for themselves, because
yes,
they know what hurts, they know what they want the most.
Indeed.
So we're going to be doing a lot of school talks. We're going to have two webinars. I will share the link, where we have stakeholders sharing their experiences and the girls asking them, speaking truth to power.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Irene, what are you up to tomorrow?
Tomorrow we are planning to have an exhibition at Moringa. Muranga Road, sorry. And then on Saturday, we're also planning to go to Meru to distribute menstrual cups to school girls.
Beautiful. It's going to be great. Irene Melly, peer trainer, Juliet Mwema, inclusive women rights advocate. Thank you so much for coming in this morning and for enlightening us. So I knew it would be a learning experience, and I'm really glad that I've learned a lot. Keep up the good work, ladies.
Thank you.
This is The Big Conversation on The Breakfast Show here on KBC English Service.